even hate him this morning.
"Well, you three are resourceful sorts, I'll give you that," said Osman, doling out strips of dried fish which they chewed with their soup. It was tough and near tasteless, but compared to prison fare it was fine cuisine. "Broke out of the camp before we could spring you ourselves. You're lucky we found you at all out there in the forest. If the Crodans hadn't been so keen on blowing their horns whenever they saw you, we probably wouldn't have."
"Right," said Keel.
He looked pointedly at Garrick, who was standing nearby.
"Imagine what would have happened if they hadn't escaped before we sprung them."
Garrick scowled and turned away. Cade sensed there was something in that comment that he'd missed, but he was too tired to chase it, and disinclined to talk to their rescuers for fear of drawing their wrath.
"Well, at least we ain't going to starve now,"
Cade said with forced optimism.
"We planned to grab food before we left, but we hit a snag."
"Hallan provides," said Osman cheerily. "That's not all he provides," said Keel, coming over with a pile of clothes in each arm.
He dumped one on the floor before Aaron, the other between Cade and Grubb.
"These ought to serve you better than those rags you're wearing on the road ahead. We brought gear for Aaron, though we had to guess at his size. The rest I've cobbled together from spares. I doubt they'll fit well, but they'll do for now."
"Thank you," said Aaron warily. They still weren't sure if they'd been rescued or kidnapped. Osman helped Cade to his feet. Everything ached, but somehow his legs still supported him.
"You look like a stout one, friend. I'll bet there's some distance in you yet. A little further, then we can get some proper rest. I'll wager the squareheads will have a hard time tracking us through these mountains with the lead we've got."
"It's not the squareheads I'm worried about," muttered Keel.
"Get dressed and get moving," Garrick snapped.
"There," said Fenn. Cade peered over the edge of the ridge and tried to find what she was pointing at. All he saw was the bleak saddle of the pass, scattered with boulders and scoured by a rising wind.
"I see nothing," said Garrick, who was lying on his belly to Cade's right.
"Look further," said Fenn, a hint of impatience in her voice. "Among the rocks." Cade squinted and redoubled his efforts. When Fenn had called Garrick and Osman over, Cade had tagged along. Nobody bothered to stop him. He wasn't sure why he wanted to be here himself. Perhaps he was just tired of not knowing what was going on.
"Ah," said Osman.
He nudged Cade and directed his gaze with a finger.
"Beyond the pass, where the mountains meet."
Now Cade saw it. A movement glimpsed among the stones. At first he thought it was a warg or a bear, but a moment later he saw his mistake, and his belly tightened in fear. It was a dreadnought. He came slinking out into the open, crouched low to the ground, cloaked and hooded. It was the one with the metal mask, the one who slid like a shadow. At this distance he was only a black blot, but Cade knew his shape and knew what he was doing. Hunting them.
"They've gained on us," said Fenn.
"How?" Osman exclaimed. "We put the gorge between us."
"And they went round it."
"God spit! Don't they rest?" Garrick snarled.
Cade was transfixed by the sight of them. Behind the hooded dreadnought came his companions, the scrawny, ragged one with the bow, wary and watchful, the lumbering giant encased in black armour. Faceless, relentless, they didn't seem like people at all, but mindless forces set upon their trail, implacable as fate. What had they done to bring down such terror on their heads? They were just two boys from the coast. They'd thought themselves beneath the notice of the Crodan Empire. They'd thought they could slip away from Sulla's Bluff and be forgotten. And yet the Crodans had sent these things to bring them back.
"They had three dreadnoughts watching him, Garrick."
He remembered hearing that somewhere, or had he dreamed it? He wasn't sure. Still, he thought sourly, it would make sense if it was only Aaron they were chasing. Keel had said him, not them. Of the two of them, Cade had always been the unimportant one.
"What are they?"
Cade asked, for now he wasn't sure how much of the stories he was supposed to believe.
"The Iron Hands elite," said Osman. "Nobody's certain how many there are, maybe a dozen in Ossia, perhaps more elsewhere."
"Are they men, or... I've heard tales..."
"Don't let them frighten you. That's what the Crodans want. Beneath that fearful show, they're men like us. Deadly warriors, but men for all that."
"Are you sure?"
said Garrick, his eyes dull and flat as he watched them.
"I'm not."
Osman gave him a look. "Whatever they are," he said, "when the Emperor needs something done, something vital, he sends the Dreadknights."
"So they're like the Crodan version of the Dawn Wardens, then?"
Garrick pushed away from the ridge with a snort.
"They're nothing like the Dawn Wardens. Move! We're wasting time."
They joined the others at the base of a pebbly slope. Aaron was sitting bundled up, glistening with feverish sweat. They heard him coughing before they saw him. Keel stood guard nearby. Grubb sat away off, picking at his nails with his knife.
"By the looks on your faces, I don't want to hear what you found," Keel said as they approached.
"They're on to us," said Garrick. "Fen, can we shake them off?"
She thought a moment. "We can change direction, take the higher, harder route. Maybe they'll miss us."
"The harder route?" Cade said. "Aaron's sick. Ain't you noticed?"
"We noticed," said Garrick.
He turned to Fen.
"Lead the way."
"Oi,"
Cade said to their backs, but neither of them paid him any mind.
"Oi, I said he's sick."
"It's all right," said Aaron, as Osman helped him to his feet. "I'm not done yet."
"No, you ain't," thought Cade, his brow furrowed with worry. "But it won't be much longer till you are."
They struck away from the passes after that, spurning well-trodden trails for scrambling climbs, narrow fissures, and half-visible paths that clung to the mountainsides. More than once they were forced to backtrack when their route became impassable. At times it felt like they were making no progress at all, but when Cade suggested taking an easier way, he was told to be silent.
"They'll run us down sure as the tide if they've got our trail," said Keel, "especially with your friend slowing us up. Our best chance is to lose them. Fen knows her craft."
The temperature dropped as they ascended, and the wind came sharp and fast, whistling down from the peaks. Aaron staggered against it, a blanket thrown over his shoulders, and Cade's arm thrown over that. Tired as Cade was, fear put steel in his legs. He was used to looking to Aaron for strength, but Aaron had turned feeble and frail overnight. The effort of keeping them alive for so many months in the camp had used him up. He had nothing left for this new trial. It was Cade's turn to be leaned on then. He didn't have Aaron's force of will, but he had the broad back and strong arms of a carpenter's son. So he bore his friend onwards, the way Aaron had borne him in the past. The ways became steeper and harder, and there was no end in sight. They ate while walking, chewing on dried meat, hard apple and biscuit, but it wasn't enough to satisfy them. Wane of day found them labouring along a trail that snaked up a steep slope of shale and scree. One wrong step would mean a deadly tumble, and the wind was doing its best to push them into the ravine. Cade's cheeks were numb, and his legs quivered. He walked, hunched over, with one hand as a shield ahead of him, the other holding Aaron up. All the energy from their brief rest was long since spent. Even Garrick and Keel, hardy men both, were visibly tiring. Only the need to support Aaron kept Cade from sinking to his knees and giving up.
"One foot, then the other."
Aaron's breathing was wheezy, and he stumbled like a drunkard, tripping over his feet. His eyes were half open and ringed with shadow, and his curly hair straggled across his forehead.
"Just a little further,"
Cade said, but he was so exhausted that it came out as a slurred mumble.
Just a little more.
Aaron went boneless and his legs buckled. Cade tried to catch him as he fell, but the shift in weight pulled him down too, and they collapsed onto the trail together, perilously close to the drop. Osman, who was bringing up the rear, called out to Garrick as he hurried to their side. The others stopped, grateful for the halt.
"Get them up," Garrick said dispassionately.
"He can't go any further,"
Cade said angrily as Osman helped him back to his feet.
"Look at the boy, Garrick," Osman said. "We'll kill him if we keep on this way."
Garrick did, his face like stone. Aaron's eyelids fluttered, but he stared blindly into the distance. Garrick's gaze flicked to Grubb.
"Carry him," he told Grubb. "That or get gone. He's the only reason you're here, after all."
Grubb's lip twitched in the hint of a snarl.
"You have a problem taking orders, Skull?"
Garrick said. Cade wondered if Grubb might lunge at him. The look on his face said he might. Keel had the same thought and moved closer with his palm on the hilt of his sword. Then Grubb raised a hand and slowly pressed a finger to his neck, where tattoos crawled from the collar of his coat.
"See this? It say Grubb carried his friend 30 leagues to safety after fight with Urds in 6th Purge. Friend was a fat bastard, too. Grubb never saw him without the chicken wing in his mouth."
He lowered his hand and shrugged.
"Mad slug skinny. Grubb carry, easy."
He picked Aaron up and slung him across his shoulders like a slain deer.
"So? We go then?"
"Dan!"
Fenn snapped suddenly. They dropped into crouches, making themselves as small as they could on the exposed mountainside. Breath quick and short, Cade searched for the source of the danger. Then Fenn pointed, and he saw. 3 dark figures moved below them in the gathering gloom. Cade's heart sank. The Dreadknights still had their trail. Slowly, relentlessly, they were closing the distance. Osman breathed a curse. He looked over at Garrick, but the Hollow Man's mouth was a hard line.
"There's a wayfarer's hut not far from here," Fenn said. "Warmth, shelter, 4 walls to defend."
She never took her eyes from the Dreadknights below.
"It's something."
"She's talking about making a stand,"
thought Cade, wild with fear.
"She's saying we can't outrun them."
He looked at the others and saw that they, too, understood her. Their gambit had failed. The Dreadknights would catch them by dawn.
"Lead the way," Garrick said.
Night had fallen by the time they found the hut, standing stark and exposed on a slope of shattered slate. The ground crunched underfoot as they approached, heads down, forcing their way through the wind. The sisters hung at half-moon among the stars to the north, pale Lissa peeking out from behind her cracked and glowering sibling. Even obscured, she was far the brighter, and the spectral light she cast was only a little bloodied by Tantera's presence. The hut was mean and low, walled and roofed with the same slate that surrounded it, and they bundled inside, grateful for sanctuary. There was a single room within, cold and long unoccupied, holding a few pallets for sleeping, a stove and a cupboard. Hide coats with furred hoods hung on hooks, and there were packs and blankets and stout travel clothes bundled up in one corner. Fenn went to the stove and found a fire already laid within. She set to work with a tinderbox and flint, while Grubb dropped Aaron on a pallet, and Cade covered him with a blanket, grim with concern. In the moonlight that spilled through the door, Aaron muttered and turned, caught in the grip of a fever dream.
"Thank you," Cade murmured.
"Mudslug can't hear you, stupid," Grubb said.
"I was talking to you."
"Huh," said Grubb.
He snorted back some snot, then snatched one of the warm coats from its hook and began to pull it on in place of his own. Cade bowed his head over his friend's chest. When Grubb had boasted about Skarl endurance, he hadn't exaggerated. A life in the far north had made his people tough. He'd carried Aaron as if he was no weight at all, and even now showed no sign of fatigue. The rest of them had gone as far as they could go. There was no more strength in them, and any hope that the Dreadknights had lost them in the dark felt slim indeed. Fenn's sparks caught on the tinder, and she pushed it into the fire. Flames gathered, and light grew in the room, until Cade could see into the corners. Keel was ransacking a cupboard which held biscuits, jars of preserves, and a wheel of cheese sealed in wax.
"Who lives here?" Cade asked, unable to understand why anyone would leave such bounty in such a desolate place.
"It's a wayfarer's hut," said Osman. "A shelter for travellers in winter, lost in the mountain snows. A remnant of the old times, before the Crodans, when hospitality was a tradition." He looked about, approvingly. "Someone still keeps it."
"At least we'll die with our bellies full, eh?" said Keel.
Then he paused, struck by the weight of his own words, and Cade saw his bravado falter.
"Damn it to the depths. Mariella. Tad."
Garrick laid a hand on his shoulder.
"Your brother will provide for them."
"He will," Keel said bitterly, "but that task should have been mine." Cade was surprised to hear affection in Garrick's gruff voice. The others were comrades in arms, but these two were friends. True friends of the kind that were more like brothers. He hadn't seen it till now.
"Stand guard with me outside," said Garrick. "They'll not catch us unawares, and we have little need to warm our bones."
"That's so," said Keel. "We've weathered worse storms together, you and I, when the seas tossed and the whales were breaching and harpoons were in our hands." Together they stepped outside and closed the door behind them. Whatever talk they'd have it in private. Their conversation would be between them and the night. The heat from the fire built quickly in the small hut, and Cade's fingers prickled as they thawed inside his gloves. But all his attention was on Aaron, muttering incoherently beneath his blankets. Fenn busied herself stoking the fire, caught up in her own thoughts. Grubb, clad in his new coat, had stripped the cheese and was devouring it, apparently intent on leaving none for the others. Osman hovered anxiously at Cade's shoulder, watching Aaron with a worried expression on his face.
"Can't we do something?"
Cade said at last.
"Would that I could," said Osman. "I don't have the craft."
"So we're just going to wait here for them to catch us up?"
"It's that, or have them come upon us in a pass when we're too tired to raise our blades," said Osman. "At least this way we'll give them a fight."
"Not Grubb," said Grubb with his mouth full. "Grubb not staying here. Grubb take his chances with the mountain, right after he's done with this cheese."
"You'll be missed," Fenn said sarcastically, not looking up from the fire.
"You'll be dead," he replied,
dipping a wedge of cheese into a pot of gooseberry jam. Cade's teeth were gritted hard enough to make his jaw ache. Anger pushed exhaustion aside, and he wanted to lash out at something. Aaron was fading before his eyes, and a doom bore down on them in the dark that couldn't be escaped or overcome. He'd die as he'd lived, without control of his own destiny, dragged along by events beyond his knowledge. He'd been a fool to dream he could change that. A howl cut through the night, mournful and eerie. Grubb jerked his head up, listening, jam on his face and a piece of cheese sticking out of his mouth. A moment later, Garrick burst in, sword in hand.
"Outside," he barked.
"They've caught us up already," Osman said.
"Should have eaten faster, Skarl."
Fenn snatched up her bow and hurried out. Grubb looked this way and that, eyes wide with alarm, as Osman grabbed his own bow and followed.
"Take Aaron's sword, Cade," he advised. "Make such an end as you can."
Cade looked down at Aaron, at the waxy white effigy he'd become. There was no time for regrets now, only time to do what had to be done. He dug under the blankets and pulled Aaron's sword from its scabbard. "Got any tattoos for killing dreadnights?" he asked Grubb. Grubb shook his head. "Aye, that's what I thought." He stepped out into the dark, guts churning, the blade a clumsy weight in his hand. A hard wind and a lifeless moonlit landscape of cold stone greeted him. The others stood ready around the perimeter of the hut, searching for the enemy. As he emerged, another thin howl drifted down the mountainside.
"I don't see them," Keel said.
The strip of lank hair atop his head blew about his face.
"Where are they?"
Grubb pushed out of the hut, knife in hand. He had the same frightened, feral look in his eyes that Cade had seen last night, when they were backed against the gorge with the Crodans closing in. Only Cade was close enough to hear what he was murmuring to himself.
"Grubb not supposed to die here. Not yet, not yet."
Cade had never really thought he was supposed to die anywhere, but he felt Sala standing close now, and it turned his knees to water. He could barely hold his sword.
"Courage, lad,"
said Osman, fingers on the string of his bow, eyes roaming the night.
"There,"
said Keel, pointing. A cowled figure rose into sight at the top of the slope, ghostly in the moonlight. Cade's blood ran cold as it came towards them with slow, fearful purpose.
"Where are the others?"
Osman demanded, casting about desperately.
"What does it matter? Shoot him!"
Keel snapped. Fenn and Osman drew together, but Garrick threw out a hand and cried,
"Hold!"
They held, bowstrings quivering at full draw, as Garrick peered closer at their target.
"No dreadnought I know of walks with a staff," he said slowly. "Nor do dogs suffer their company."
Now that the figure had cleared the rise, Cade saw that Garrick was right. They carried a jagged staff with a splintered tip, and at their side was a lean, shaggy hound. Cloak and cowl were a patchwork of furs that blew and flapped about them as they approached. It was a stranger, but not one of those they'd feared. The stranger stopped, seeing the raised bows. At their feet, the dog crouched down, flattened its ears, and let out another sorrowful howl.
"Who goes?" Garrick demanded.
They pushed back their cowl. Long black hair curled and whipped around a black and white striped face. "I am Vika Walks the Barrows," she called. "I saw your light, and I would share your shelter." 31. Strange is the speech of spirits. They will send you by crooked paths. Vika had learned that lesson well, studying under Agali Singh's The Dark, and during the years of wandering that followed. Everything was changeable in the Shadowlands, truth most of all. Messages from there were unclear, subject to many interpretations, and they only revealed themselves by degrees. Many times Vika had conversed with the spirits, many times they'd shown her signs and portents, but rare indeed was the vision that meant what it first appeared to. Seeking one answer, she'd often find a different one, or discover that the question itself had changed. The Shadowlands were a place of chaos, and its denizens were all in some way mad. Yet here, on a bare mountainside on this night of all nights, she'd found these travellers. It was hard not to find meaning in that.
"Is that a druidess?"
she'd heard one of them say. He was young, with a sturdy body, a broad face, and incongruously delicate features. The wonder in his voice saddened her. He'd never seen one of her kind. The man who looked to be their leader had the archers lower their bows.
"You walk a lonely way,"
he said, his voice thick with suspicion.
"What brings you to this bleak place?"
"It is in my nature to wander," Vika replied. She put a hand on Ruck's back. "And as you see, I am not lonely."
It wasn't an honest answer, and he knew it, but how could she explain in a way he'd understand? She'd followed signs since leaving the old wood, subtle nudges from the spirits beneath the notice of the untrained. The flocking of starlings had sent her in one direction, a grey fox had sent her in another. She'd seen black clouds over the mountains that looked like an open hand, fingers spread like a puppeteer's. She'd bled herself into a bowl and cast the bones into it, seeking wisdom, and they'd sent her into the storm. At last, abandoning herself to fate, she'd walked up into the Ostenbergs, though all sense told her it was pointless. The champion she'd been shown was unlikely to be in these barren heights. She'd have a better chance staying in the old wood. As the night fell and the moons rose, a fear had begun to grow in her. The stars and the sisters above her now matched her vision of the Dirichum. This was the appointed time, then. But she'd found no one, and the stain of doubt spread across her heart. Had she been a fool? Were the signs merely the addled dreams of a poisoned mind? Ruck, sensing her mistress's mood, had become distressed and set up a plaintive howl. Then she'd seen the glow of a fire through the shuttered windows of a wayfarer's hut, a beacon in the blowing dark, and she doubted no longer. She approached carefully, descending the slope of broken slate towards the strangers clustered around the hut. Six of them, wary as wounded wolves. She sensed the danger that clung to them. "I am Garrick," said the black-bearded one, whose throat had been cut long ago.
"It gladdens me to see a keeper of the faith, but you'll find small shelter here. Dread knights are abroad tonight, and they hunt for us. You'd do well to keep walking."
Dread knights. The word struck her like a blow. No wonder the night felt so ominous. No wonder Ruck had howled. "Keep walking," Garrick advised. "Keep walking, as she ever had, always on the move. Dreadknights would have no mercy for a druidess." But what then? She knew what waited if she didn't find the champion. She'd seen it at the Dirichum. "My friend is sick," the boy blurted out. "Badly sick. Can you help him?" That made up her mind for her. She had at least to take a look.
I'll help."
She turned her gaze on Garrick. "If you'll let me in." Garrick gave the boy a dangerous glare, but he stepped aside.
"Your choice, druidess."
They watched her uncertainly as she entered the hut. The warmth of the stove was blessed relief from the clawing wind, and there was the sick boy, lying on a pallet beside it. She crouched by his side and examined him, and it only took a moment to see it was serious.
"What's your name?" she asked the other boy who'd crowded in alongside her.
Ruck bustled restlessly about the hut, sniffing her new surroundings.
"Cade of Shoal Point."
"Heat some water for me, Cade." She pointed to a battered pan that hung on the wall, and he set to it, pouring water from one of the traveller's skins. Vika exposed the sick boy's scrawny chest and put her ear to his ribcage. He'd been halfway to starving even before he fell ill. These boys made odd companions to the others, who had the air of capable warriors.
"Tell me," she said, "why do the Dread Knights hunt you?"
"We escaped from the camp at Solar's Bluff," Cade said. Even with all that was happening, she heard pride in his voice at that.
"Aaron and me and the Scarl. The others are helping us."
He frowned. "I think."
"Grub," said Grub as he came back inside. "Not the Scarl. Plenty Scarls, only one Grub."
"I thought you were leaving," said Cade spitefully. "Now's your chance."
"Grub leave when he wants," he said. "Not done with the cheese yet."
He picked up the wheel of cheese and took a bite, his eyes on Vika.
"If the Dread Knights seek you, you must be someone of note," Vika suggested, as she raised Aaron's eyelids and looked at the whites beneath. "Dread Knights do not waste their time on runaway boys and foreigners."
"They're of no note," said Garrick as he came through the doorway.
The hut was small and cramped, and he seemed to take up more than his share of space.
Nor are any of us.
His tone ended that line of inquiry.
There's three of them, Cade said. One with a hammer, one with a bow, and one who carries two blades,
Vika finished for him.
I've seen them.
You have?
We crossed paths near Salt Fork.
Vika was grave.
It couldn't be coincidence that she'd encountered those dreadnights hunting fugitives before. Now, leagues and months away, here they were again.
Who are they? Cade asked her.
Their names are Ruin, Plague, and Sorrow, said Garrick. I saw them at Salt Fork, too, and I know that together they're beyond us.
Vika turned her head to him. You were at Salt Fork. Garrick's face showed nothing, his eyes shadowed in the shifting light from the stove.
You're wasting your time with the boy. He'll be dead by sunrise if the Dreadnights find us, and we have neither the strength to outrun them nor the craft to evade them. If you have some way to help, speak now, for I'd rather not die here. If not, save your herbs and your neck, and go while you can.
I am not yours to command, Garrick, and I do what I will, she replied.
She plucked a pouch of dried elman thorn from inside her cloak and passed it to Cade.
Empty that into the water and give it a stir. Don't let it boil.
As you wish, said Garrick. I've warned you twice. Let's hope the aspects are kinder to you than they were to the faithful at Salt Fork.
He moved to leave, but Vika stopped him.
Your sword, she said. Will you show it to me?
Garrick frowned, but did as he was asked. It was old and finely crafted, nicked with the memories of many battles and speckled with flecks of dried blood.
Has it a name?
She asked, thinking of the bright sword that had burned like the sun in her vision.
Names are for noble blades, earned through great deeds, said Garrick. Ossia is no land for heroes now, not since we sold ourselves to Croda. This sword is only a sword.
Vika heard bitterness and disappointment in his voice, and felt an answering anger. He was in his 50s, perhaps, old enough to have been an adult when the Crodans came, old enough to be cheated of all the hopes and dreams that had formed him, to stand witness as his gods and values were eroded. Maybe he wasn't the champion she sought, but he'd been at Salt Fork, and she recognized that tone of weary resistance. Whoever this man was, he'd fought back, and that was more than she'd ever done.
We are each tested in our own way.
She reached inside her cloak, deft fingers plucking out a clay file that she knew by the imprint on its wax seal. She handed it to Garrick. Have everyone take a sip of this. The barest sip, I warn you. More than that and you may not survive. She looked back at the boy on the pallet. I will see to him now, but someone must carry him onwards.
Grab will carry him, said the skull.
Cade gave him a surprised look.
Grub has a lot of skin to cover yet, he said,
and then he grinned.
Painted lady has an idea.
What is this? Garrick asked, eyeing the file doubtfully.
It will put strength in your limbs. Tell the others to take what clothes and food they can from this place. I see you are wearied, but we must travel hard and fast now.
Travel where?
Vika felt her stomach turn over at the thought of what she intended.
To a place even dreadnights might not follow, if I can find it at all.
Garrick's frown loosened as he understood.
You speak of Skavengard.
Aye, and perhaps there we will meet worse horrors than those who follow. But any chance is better than none.
It was a wild notion to take them to Skavengard. But if her faith had ever meant anything, if her whole life and all she believed was not a lie, then it was the only thing she could do. If she left them now, she might as well give up being a druidess. She buried her fingers in the warm fur of Ruck's ruff, and there found the steadiness she needed.
"Why would you join us, knowing what hunts us?"
The sullen suspicion had vanished from Garrick's tone, as he realized she was genuine. Now he sounded amazed. "If the aspects are silent, it is because we have forgotten how to listen," Vika said, Agali's words spoken at their last meeting. She got to her feet and faced him, firm with purpose. "I'm listening now." 32. The wind flayed them as they struggled along in single file, insects against the bleak flank of the mountain. They walked a ledge little wider than a man's outstretched arms, with a killing drop to cold grey rock on one side. The sun wasn't yet above the peaks, but the sky was a serene blue threaded with twists of cloud. To the east, the slopes were edged in bright fire. "Let each dawn find you different." Agali used to say that back when Vika was just an acolyte. Every day, a person should learn something, experience something, do something that left them changed, even in a small way. Agali would be proud of her today. Vika's patchwork cowl flapped about her face as she planted her staff before her, leading the line up the narrow path. Her eyes roamed the landscape, searching for indications that she was still on the right track. They'd rounded the broken peak, found the leaning stone and the waterfall. But where was the coxcomb ridge, or the cleft that led to the valley? Where was the tree and the stair and the door? It had been hours since the waterfall, and she worried she'd led them astray. Years had passed since Haggath had told her the way to Skavengard, and even that information was second-hand. It was Polla Calls the Waters who'd actually travelled there and returned with tales fit to still the blood in her veins. Had Haggath missed a step in his explanation, or had Vika's memory failed? It had never been entirely trustworthy, mixed up as it was with potions and dream visions until fact and fiction blurred together. But she'd found the broken peak, the leaning stone, and the waterfall. By the grace of the communion, the shared lore of the druids, she had a chance to save these people's lives. She had to believe she was on the right path. "Have faith, Vika walks the barrows. You always were too quick to doubt." She looked back along the line. Ruck was close at her heels, head down, tongue lolling. Behind her walked Cade, and behind him the Skarl they called Grub, who carried the sick boy on his shoulders. The others came after, faces flinty as the mountain. They'd walked through a night and a day and another night since their escape, with only a few hours of rest. Yet there was still vigour in them. Vika's potion had put it there. They wouldn't feel the fatigue until later, but when it came it would be crushing. "Is Aaron going to live?" Cade asked her, catching her eye. "With rest he will recover," Vika told him. "But we must reach shelter soon. He will not survive the elements much longer." "Are we close?" "I think so," Vika said, with a smile she hoped was reassuring. She was used to solitude, and the niceties of society didn't come naturally to her. She headed onwards, but Cade spoke to her back. "You're afraid of Skavengard, ain't you?"
"As you should be."
"My ma told me tales of that place, but I thought they were just stories. She said it was home to one of the sorcerer kings."
"Ajmat Jal," Vika said absently, scanning the riven landscape. "The sorcerer kings and queens of old Ossia wielded great power, but for all that they were men and women like you and I. Some were noble and just, some decadent and cruel. Towards the end, there was more cruelty than justice. But even among such infamous company, the name of Ajmat Jal rings loud across the ages." She felt a hand run up her back and stiffened. No, not her back,
Rux. Cade was stroking the hound as he walked. She felt a warm wash of pleasure from her companion, and it warmed her to the boy in return. I know not what cataclysm befell the Second Empire, nor what became of the sorcerer kings of old, but terrible things were done in Skavengard, and the memory lingers in those silent halls and empty cloisters. Her painted face darkened. Something walks there, it said. Something that does not love the living. Then suddenly she raised her staff. Ah, that is our path. Ahead, a deep, narrow cleft split the rock. It was just as Haggath had promised. Somehow, she'd missed the Coxcomb Ridge, but her instincts had steered her right. The cleft took them out of the wind, leading them up a sheltered incline. The stone beneath their feet was uneven and sharp, gullied by old waters. They struggled upwards with single-minded purpose, grunting with effort. All their focus was on their destination. They didn't think beyond that. These were men and women who hadn't expected to see the dawn, and they dared not hope too far. They emerged from the fissure into a small rocky valley, a wound in the mountains with steep sides that stood high and close. Alone amid the lifeless stone was a tree, black and warped with age, a mass of knots and boils without a single leaf on it. The tree, thought Vika. Joha be praised. But after the tree there was supposed to be a stair, and after that, the doors to Skavengard. Yet though the valley was small enough to see to its end, there was no stair here.
Where now, Druidess? Garrick rumbled at her shoulder.
Give me a moment, said Vika. The path to Skavengard is not easily found. If it exists at all, muttered Fen. It was pitched for Kiel's ears, but Vika's hearing was sharper than most. She felt a surge of annoyance at the ingratitude. Fen had been as keen as anyone to follow her back at the hut. She walked away from them, her boots crunching on the stones, Ruck panting at her side. There was something wrong about this. There was no stair, and no break in the valley walls that might lead elsewhere. Yet she'd followed Haggath's instructions to the letter, and there was the black tree he'd promised. Had she been misled? Had Polla Calls the Waters really been to Skavengard at all? Go back, she thought. This is not the way.
It's a dead end, Kiel said.
We should backtrack while we still can, Fen told her. Skavengard is a fireside tale. We've walked all night and I barely feel it. With your potions we'll outlast the Dreadnights. Let me guide us out of these mountains. They're right, Vika thought. Go back. Go back quickly before the Dreadnights catch us all. Something tickled at the edge of her senses, something she couldn't quite place.
Come then, said Garrick, making the decision for the group. There's no time to waste. Let's...
Hold! Vika cried, lifting one hand in the air. She looked over her shoulder at the travellers, who were already heading back towards the entrance to the valley. You are all suddenly very eager to leave.
Because there's nothing here, Kiel told her. Any mudwit can see that.
You've trusted me this far, said Vika. Trust me now. Besides, you'll not outrun anyone without me. They cursed and grumbled, but they stayed where they were, as she turned her attention to the tree. She didn't blame them for their mistrust. She, too, wanted to leave. It was like a physical pull. Her thoughts flowed towards escape, like rivers to the sea, and no matter how she tried to divert them, they still reached the same end. She was always too quick to doubt, but not this quick. Something was pushing them away. She reached into her cloak and ran her fingers over the files there. Each was sealed with a stopper carved with a symbol in stone speak, the secret tongue of druids. She found the right one, drew it out and took a swallow. Now, she said to herself, what is here? The potion crackled through her body like flash fire, spreading from her nape over her skull, racing along her limbs. Her pupils grew wide,
irises thinning to almost nothing, and her breath surged in and out like a tide. She felt as if she was falling gently backwards, sinking into another state of being. Aldebright and Haglock, a potion for clarity, to slow the mind and senses. Life was a flurry, seen through a tunnel, always rushing from task to task. It was easy to miss what was right in front of you. Everything expanded around her. The barren valley became vast, teeming with the ticks and taps of insect life. Every edge turned sharp, cutting the shadows like blades. She smelled the sickness in Aaron, heard the wet chill that lay on his lungs. Fen and Keel were murmuring about her behind her back, casting doubts where they thought she couldn't hear. But beneath the words, she sensed things they didn't mean to say. How distrust came so naturally to Fen that she knew no other way. How Keel had a hole in him he could never fill. And how both had enough belief and affection for the old faith that the presence of a druidess gave them hope. She wouldn't let them down. She approached the tree. It looked huge now, swollen with the centuries and scarred with age. She placed her hands on the bark, closed her eyes, and let her fingers roam the cracks and ridges. Immediately she felt it, a scar that had been placed there with intent. She found another, a line that was too neat and straight, and a knot hole, round and perfect. She stepped back and opened her eyes, and what she hadn't seen before was now clear. A symbol had been crafted onto the tree, a ward of some kind, hidden in the bark. The very sight of it repelled her. "Go back," it said. "It's here," she called, grinning with relief. "The stair is here." For how could it be otherwise, when someone had gone to such lengths to turn seekers away? She stepped back from the tree and swept the valley with her newfound sight. A jagged line in the stone, which she'd taken to be handspan wide, stretched apart beneath her gaze. She saw a perilous set of steps, concealed by folds in the rock, zigzagging upwards. "There!" She threw out a hand and pointed with a wild laugh. "She's shade-touched. There's no stair," Osman said to the others, but Vika hurried towards it, stumbling as the potion dizzied her. "It's here," she said again as she reached the foot of it, with Ruck barking excitedly and running around her. Only when she was close enough to touch it did it seem real. Cut into the stone at the base of the stair was another symbol, an arrangement of walls and curves that branded itself on her mind. "A ward to deter the curious, a ward to hide the stair. Small wonder few ever found this place. I'd wager even the Delvers do not know Skavengard." They came reluctantly, still half ready to turn back. Only when they were by her side did their faces clear. "How did we not see it before?" Osman wondered. "Someone did not want you to," said Vika. She turned to the skull carrying the sick boy, and just for an instant she saw something in the tattoos on his face, found sense in a language she didn't understand. Impressions leaped into her mind, made possible by her state of heightened consciousness. Pictures of heroism, strength of arms, the bloody brotherhood that existed between warriors, and all of it marred and made rotten by the ugly black swipe across his eyes. Grubb saw something in her reaction, and his gaze became dark and hot with danger. She switched her attention to Aaron before he could read her. "The way is hard. We will need to lash the boy to you. Can you bear him?"
"Grubb can't carry Mudslug," he said.
She could tell by his voice that he suspected something.
"Then we climb," said Garrick, with new fervour.
Their doubts had fallen away, now the power of the wards had been overcome. There was no more griping and grizzling at her lead. Vika took some satisfaction from that. The stair was steep, sometimes so steep they had to climb it like a ladder, and Ruck had to be hauled up. The steps were worn, made smooth and slippery by centuries of rain, and they went with care. A tumble might take them all down. Vika worried about Grubb, who was carrying Aaron piggyback, But soon she saw that he was the most sure-footed of them all. Though he looked lumbering and clumsy, his sense of balance was superb. The stair switched back on itself over and over, and they followed each twist, hugging tight to the stone. The wind began to pick up again as they made their way up the valley wall, carrying to Vika a whiff of terror sweat and the sound of a hammering heartbeat. The way was precarious, and there was fear in all of them, but one more so than the others. Looking back down the line, she saw Fen, her freckled face half covered by a hood, eyes fixed firmly on the next step. She gave no outward sign of it, but inside she was terrified.
"She's afraid of heights," Vika thought, "and determined none should know." Who were these people she'd tied her fate to? Who were these strangers the Crodans had sent their most deadly agents to catch? Was one of them really the champion she sought?
Her thoughts scattered in alarm as Cade stumbled, his foot slipping out from under him. But Kiel was close behind, and he grabbed the boy so that he only fell to his hands and knees and no worse. Vika breathed again. Her craft would only sustain them so far, and fatigue was setting in as the potion wore off. She dared not give them another dose. The withdrawal from such a powerful drug might kill them. She could only hope they'd last until Skavengard.
"Thanks," said Cade sheepishly as Kiel picked him up. He peered over the edge of the stair, and the colour drained from his face.
"Long way down, eh?" said Kiel.
"No," said Cade, and pointed. "Look!"
A cold wash of fear ran through Vika. Three figures were entering the valley, sliding out of the fissure like cockroaches from a crack. They were made small by distance, but it didn't diminish their presence. She sensed them as much as saw them, and with her expanded awareness, they possessed a strange density, as if they were more real than the rock that surrounded them. They were like black holes punched in the fabric of the world, sucking in light and life, windows to elsewhere. These were the enemies she'd pitted herself against. For the first time, she understood the scale of what she'd taken on.
"Make haste," she hissed. "The gate cannot be far."
They began to climb the stair at reckless speed. Vika led the way, heedless of the drop, her lichwood and lightning glass staff gripped tight in her hand. Cade slipped again. His prisoner's boots were not well suited to climbing, but Kiel was ready to catch him once more. As they went, Vika cast glances down below. The Dreadknights had stopped at the mouth of the valley, as the same arts that had repelled Vika made them doubt themselves. The cowled one, Sorrow, came creeping forward, crouched low to the ground, searching the earth for signs.
"Turn back," she thought at them, adding her will to the power that guarded the valley. "Turn back. There's nothing here."
Then Sorrow straightened and lifted his face to reveal a metal mask of howling grief. Though she couldn't see his eyes, Vika felt his gaze meet hers. The world slowed around her, and just for a moment, there was only him and her in it. She knew one thing with certainty then. She'd been marked, and there was no hiding anymore. Wherever she went, Sorrow would find her.
"I see it! The top of the stair!"
Osman's voice jerked her back to the moment. Now she saw it too, the end of the climb, where a hidden shelf, invisible from ground level, cut into the side of the valley.
"Courage!" she cried, more for her own sake than the others. "We will outrun them yet!"
Sorrow lifted his swords, and at his signal, the Dreadknights rushed into the valley, making for the foot of the stair. But Vika felt Skavengard within her reach now, close enough to grasp. She surged forward, and the others followed her, headlong into the unknown. 33. They clambered up the last of the steps and onto the ledge, their legs weakening with every step. There they paused, panting before a dark, gaping portal with pillars to either side, worn down to mere bulges in the rock. If there had been a gate here once, it was long gone,
leaving only the faintest signs that this entrance was the work of human hands.
"Lantern!"
Garrick called as soon as he saw it. Osman unhitched one from the side of his pack, and he and Fenn set about lighting it with flint and oil. Cade drifted to the portal and peered inside, while Vika looked back into the valley. The Dreadnoughts were already at the foot of the stair. She drew out another file and unstoppered it. A warning buzz at the back of her skull told her she already had a dangerous amount of poison in her veins, but this was only a mild concoction, and she was afraid enough to risk it. She tipped it into her mouth, tasting bitter herbs on her tongue, then turned away from the edge and strode towards the portal, Ruck at her heels.
"Catch up with me," she said. "I will see the way is clear."
"It's pitch dark in there," Osman said.
"There is light enough for me," she replied as she swept past him.
The corridor beyond was a smashed echo of grandeur. Flagstones were broken and tilted. The vaults overhead had cracked and dropped huge chunks of masonry on the floor. Crumbling pillars marked the way, with tall, shadowy figures between them, mutilated by the ages. Yet despite lying in ruin, the work of her ancestors struck Vika with awe, and she felt small as she hastened inside. She saw its ancient greatness in hints and patterns, a sculpted edge here, the remains of a mural there. Entering this place stirred some primal collective pride deep inside her. Her potion was making her head throb, but it lent her owl's eyes, and the light from the portal showed the corridor in shades of grey. Ruck followed her, sharing her vision, past dripping stalactites and fallen rubble. To either side were statues of men and women in strange robes and towering elaborate headpieces. They'd been carved from some black glistening stone that hadn't held detail well, and their faces were smooth, impassive, and alien. The corridor turned at the end, sending her down ancient steps overlooked by a guardian demon in the shape of a mantis. She was approaching the limit of the light now. Even owls couldn't see in total darkness, but she didn't want to wait for the lantern. Every moment counted, and if they were to stay ahead of the pursuit, she had to find their path. She rounded another corner, and with a small gasp of relief, she saw new light. The thinnest sliver, but light nonetheless, creeping beneath the doors at the end of the corridor. These were the doors Haggath spoke of. If Polla's story was true, Skavengard lay beyond. She hastened towards them. Twice her height and cut from metal, they had survived the centuries better than the blank, mouldering statues standing to either side. They were still dense with detail, a swarming tangle of curves and angles that flowed and eddied without symmetry. She searched for a handle or lever, and finding none, she pushed against the metal. When that failed, she found holds with her fingertips and pulled. The doors remained shut. She stepped back, frustrated. Haggath had made no mention of how to get through the doors once she found them. She searched them again, more carefully this time, and found two hidden key grips recessed in the metal. She tried to turn them, but they wouldn't move. "I would be fortunate indeed if it was that easy." She began to feel around the door, exploring the crevices and edges of its complex surface. Something gave beneath her fingertips with a click. A button! She tried the keys again, to no avail. There had to be more. The old Ossians loved their puzzle boxes and finger traps. There was a trick to this. She just had to find it. Ruck bustled about her feet, snorting with growing agitation as she located another button, and another yet. Soon she'd found buttons hidden all over the door. When some were pressed in, others popped back out. A combination, but how to guess it? She heard footsteps behind her, and light grew there. "They are coming," Osman called as he hurried round the corner, lantern held high. The others came clattering after him.
"Why doors not open? Open doors!"
Grubb cried, Aaron still jogging and jerking against his back.
"They're locked," Cade said, panic in his voice.
"Put your shoulders to them," Keel barked. "We'll break them down."
"Silence," Vika shouted, and wrapped her staff against the floor. "Brute strength will not help us here. Let me think."
"Think fast, then," rumbled Garrick. "They're not far behind us."
He began snapping orders to the others, arranging them along the corridor in defensive positions. Vika set herself to the task again. Her eyes flickered over the maze of shapes and patterns, searching for meaning, finding none. A dark pressure grew at the back of her mind, growing greater with each passing moment. It was the Dreadnoughts, bearing down on them, their presence weighty as the mountain.
"Prynne, ragged mummer, aspect of deceit and trickery, help me now. Give me the wisdom to solve this."
Ruck barked at her side, calling for her attention. Vika ignored her at first, so intent was she on the puzzle of the doors, but Ruck barked again, and this time Vika sensed her insistence. The wolfhound was sniffing at the foot of one of the statues. Vika caught the faintest of scents, so weak as to be almost a memory. A human scent. Female. She crouched next to Ruck, her arm over the dog's back, and peered at the base of the statue. Scratched in the stone were three spidery symbols, with a smaller one beneath them as a signature. Polla calls the waters had left druid sign. Excited, she bent closer. The symbols were messily carved and hard to read, but she made sense of them at last. When she did, her eyes widened.
"Enter by Shadowlands."
Quickly she stood, fumbling inside her cloak for another phial. She was already close to the limit of her tolerance. Another potion, especially one as strong as this, might do her untold damage. But all their lives were in her hands, and she dared not hesitate. She drew out the phial, broke the seal, and tipped it down her throat.
"I hear them," Fenn called down the corridor.
"Druidess," Garrick cried, "whatever arts you have, use them now. Open these doors."
The potion crashed through her brain like a wave, sweeping her thoughts before it. She staggered and leaned on her staff. It felt as if her head was expanding, ready to split and burst. This was the kind of brew that demanded preparation, meditation, and prayer before it was consumed. Swilled down like this, it sent her mind reeling. She hadn't tried to bridge the divide to the Shadowlands since that terrible night at the Dirricum. Now she flung herself across recklessly, and madness swarmed around her.
"Find the way."
Everything crawled with movement, glimpses of that other realm that lay beneath the surface of the visible world, a dark mirror to the land of the living. She saw strange and twisted reflections wavering just beyond reality. This ancient corridor existed there, as did those statues, this mountain, those doors.
"The doors. Focus on the doors."
She furrowed her brow and marshaled her splintered mind. Some power had been laid over this entrance, a taut membrane seething with dangerous energies. She brushed against it, tentatively, ready to recoil, but it didn't harm her. Whatever sorcery this might be, it wasn't meant to stop her. Polla had passed this way and survived. So then would she.
"Feel it. Feel the answer."
She sensed a shape there, invisible to the casual explorer, but not to one trained to see beyond. It was written plainly on the doors, but only in the Shadowlands, as if drawn by a finger on a fogged mirror. She concentrated, and all at once it came to her. A pattern in the buttons, as clear as if she'd been given a diagram. With a cry of triumph, she surged forward, fingers finding the buttons. Now this one, now this one, now that. Something clanked behind the door. She seized both key grips together and twisted. They turned inwards with a crunch, and she pushed hard. There was a moment of resistance as the membrane of the invisible barrier stretched and snapped. Then a line of white daylight split the doors as the way to Skaven Guard opened.
Help her!
Someone shouted, as the light swelled and filled her vision, and the grinding of the ancient hinges drowned out all else. Like a drunkard, she tottered through the doorway and came to a halt, amazed. She stood on a broad balcony, set into the side of a valley enclosed by snow-tipped peaks. A delicate balustrade ran around the edge of the balcony, and at each corner was a pedestal on which stood broken stumps that might once have been guardian beasts. To her right, a stairway led down, but she ignored it, captivated by the sight before her, the magnificent and somber stronghold of Ajmat Jarl. The sun was directly ahead, moments from rising over the eastern slopes. Warm light was creeping down towards three rocky islands in the still weedy lake which covered the valley floor. One island was massive, dominating the valley. The others were small by comparison, lumpen outcrops hugging close to their larger brother. Skavengard covered all three, clinging to their sides, perching on their tips, sprawling where there was space to sprawl. Narrow bridges linked the islands. She saw skeletal spires, mournful towers, colonnaded walkways brooding in dusty silence. It was a castle, perhaps, or a palace, or a manse, a folly of a fallen empire, the size of a town. In the last of the morning's shadow, it was sad and hollow, crumbling beneath the weight of its emptiness.
"Close the doors!"
Garrick's shout jerked her from her daze. She looked back to see Fenn, the last of them, sprinting through the doors onto the balcony.
"They're right behind me!" she yelled.
Garrick and Keel had each taken a door and were shoving against them. Grubb dumped Aaron on the ground and ran to help. Cade went with him, while Fenn and Osman readied their bows. The heavy doors began to close, screeching on their thousand-year-old hinges. Vika stared into the dark between them, and horror grew in her heart as she heard the thumping of heavy feet and saw an armored giant come charging out of the gloom.
"Brace yourselves!" she cried.
Before the doors could close, ruin crashed into them from the other side, throwing them back enough for his huge hands to grip their edges. He loomed into the gap, holding them apart.
"Push!"
bellowed Garrick, and they dug their toes in and redoubled their efforts. Yet even with four of them against him, the Dreadknight forced the doors wider with irresistible strength. Vika, her mind still scrambled from the overdose, gazed at ruin in terror. In that moment, she saw beneath that tarnished armor and found only emptiness beyond, a void so vast and profound that she shrank from it. Osman and Fenn let fly with their bows. Osman's arrow caromed off Ruin's armor, but Fenn found a gap in the plates at his thigh, and her arrow struck flesh. Ruin gave a roar of pain and stumbled back, his grip loosening. The doors began to grind closed, but Ruin gathered himself and seized them again, arresting their progress. A whisper of premonition warned Vika of danger, and she pulled her head aside as an arrow shot past Ruin and sailed over the balcony towards Skavengard. It had been aimed at her. Her blood began to boil with poison and rage, and she felt her fear turn to loathing. She'd run from these creatures long enough. There was something in the Dreadknight's very existence that was in opposition to her nature, something that repulsed her. Whatever they were, these agents of the Croden Empire, their presence could not be borne. Unnatural. Hateful. Enemy. Osman dropped his bow, drew his sword and ran to attack Ruin, seeking to drive him back from the doors. His blade was caught by another before it could find its target. Sorrow darted under Ruin's arm, his short sword thrusting for Osman's belly, but Osman leaped back before it could find its mark. Like a snake, the Dreadknight slipped through onto the balcony, his fangs the points of his blades. Osman retreated hastily before him. Leaving Grubb to hold one door, Garrick lunged at Sorrow from the side, sword in hand, and then all three of them were thrusting and dodging in a deadly dance of steel with Sorrow at the center. Yet even two against one, Garrick and Osman were overmatched, barely able to keep up with their opponent's speed. It was as much as they could do to defend themselves. Fen knocked, drew on Ruin, and released. Sorrow's short blade swept out, faster than the eye could follow, and batted the shaft from the air without missing a beat in his battle with Osman and Garrick. It was done with such casual ease that it was almost an insult. Seeing his friend in difficulty, Keel drew his blade and threw himself into the fray with a yell. The three of them together managed to check Sorrow's advance, but that left only Cade and Grubb holding the doors, and they were no match for the armoured giant beyond. Steadily the doors were forced back. Once Ruin got through the gap, plague would follow, and it would all be over then. As if moved by some will that wasn't her own, Vika stepped forwards and raised her staff. The chaos of the Shadowlands surged and roiled about her, churning beneath the skin of the world, half visible to her potion-clouded eyes. She felt something well up within her, some blazing force undammed by the fury and terror the Dreadknights inspired.
"Back, you demons! And Joha's name, you shall not enter here!"
At that moment, the sun rose above the peaks behind her and cast its light full upon the balcony. Within that light, she fancied she saw a greater light, which blazed out from her staff to dazzle her. It burned in the eyes of the Dreadknights, and they cringed from it.
"By the Nine, I forbid you!"
she shouted, thrusting her staff towards them. Ruin staggered back from the doors, his arms before his visored face. And Sorrow disappeared through the gap, flowing out of sight like quicksilver.
"Now!"
yelled Garrick, and they put their shoulders to the metal and heaved. Vika kept her staff held out as the doors screeched together. Light filled her and surrounded her, scorching through her veins, consuming her in agonizing ecstasy. Only when the doors to Skavengard finally crashed shut did the light snuff out like a candle, and she collapsed into darkness. XXXIV. The boom of the closing doors echoed around the valley like thunder. Cade kept his weight against the metal, panting, waiting for an impact from the other side. None came. Whatever Vika had done, it had discouraged them for now. Eventually, half disbelieving, they all stepped away from the doors. Cade caught Keel's eye, and the bitter Bracca grinned.
"Reckon that'll hold 'em," he said.
Cade slumped against the door and grinned back, warmed by the unexpected camaraderie. Now he was no longer in fear for his life, an immense tiredness stole into his limbs. They'd climbed and run and fought past the limits of their endurance, and there was a toll to pay. Aaron lay unconscious where Grubb had dumped him, ropes still tangled round his body. He was frighteningly pale, and his breath fluttered past dry, cracked lips. Cade stumbled over and knelt by his side.
"Hoi,"
he said quietly. He put his hand on Aaron's shoulder and shook him, but there was no response.
"Hoi, we made it."
"Did you see?"
Osman said. He was staring at the druidess, who'd fallen in a heap of stitched hides and straggly black hair, her lightning-glass staff lying beside her.
"Did you see what she did?"
"We saw," said Garrick.
He surveyed the balcony, his eyes lingering on the strange castle on the lake.
"We can't stay here in the open."
Cade lifted his head in despair. The idea of getting up again was almost inconceivable.
"Skarl, pick up the boy," said Garrick.
He looked down at Vika, and when he spoke again, Cade heard new respect in his voice.
"I'll carry the druidess."
Ruck, who'd been circling her mistress anxiously, growled low in her throat as Garrick approached. He stooped and held out a hand to the hound.
"Peace," he said. "She will not be harmed."
Ruck sniffed at him and appeared satisfied with that. Garrick picked her up carefully, and Osman took her staff.
"On your feet, eh?"
Keel said to Cade. His tone was rough but not unkind, and when Cade pulled himself upright, Keel clapped him on the shoulder. Grubb sloped over and hefted Aaron onto his back again.
"Come on, mudslug," he said with weary cheer. Grub think you not dead yet.
A wide stairway with a crumbling balustrade meandered down the cliffside, broken up by landings cut from the same white stone as the balcony. They followed it to a boathouse of some kind, nestled beside the lake, with delicately moulded cornices and a domed roof as smooth and rounded as an egg. Entering through a doorway on the upper floor, they found themselves in a large room, empty and dusted with rubble from cracks in the roof. Arched windows gave a view of the lake. Garrick looked it over critically.
Fen, Osman, find something to make a fire. Everyone else get some rest. No one sets foot on Skavengard till we're recovered.
Cade was pathetically relieved to hear it. Grub put Aaron down and Cade wrapped him in blankets, then lay by his side. Briefly, he entertained the thought of trying to stay awake, as if that could prevent Aaron from being taken by the illness that racked him. But his eyes were already drooping, and sleep wouldn't be fought off. The last thing he saw was Aaron's face, white as a corpse.
"Don't leave me here, Aaron. Don't leave me here alone."
When he woke, it was night. A low fire smouldered in the centre of the room, with humped bodies lying round it, wrapped in blankets. Ruck was curled up at Vika's feet, her muzzle hidden beneath her tail. Cade listened to the sound of sleeping sighs, the murmur of the fire, the lapping of the lake outside. It was quiet here, and the fire was warm, and he felt at peace. Then, with a jolt of alarm, he remembered Aaron and lurched upright. Aaron had turned onto his side, facing Cade, his eyes still closed. Cade's panic eased a little as he saw Aaron was still breathing. More, his breath was deep and steady, and there was colour in his cheeks again. Cade brushed lank strands of curly hair back from Aaron's forehead and checked his temperature. He was no expert, but he felt no fever heat there. His face brightened with hope. Had the druidess's brew worked? Was Aaron over the worst of it? He watched his friend for a while, but soon it became clear he'd get no further signs of recovery, and he could do nothing but leave him to sleep. He lay back and worried, staring at the ceiling, but that did no good either. Sleep was beyond him. Though his body was tired, his mind was wide awake, and his stomach was growling. He got up quietly and looked around. Everyone was sound asleep, but Osman's pack lay open by the fire. Digging into it, he found dried meat and hardapple. Mean fare, but he wolfed it down all the same, glancing about to make sure no one was watching. He took some more and stuffed it in his pockets for Aaron when he woke. Then he took even more, because the lessons learned in the work camp were still fresh in his memory. He wasn't sure if it counted as stealing or not, since they'd been sharing their food anyway, but the small rebellion of taking without permission made him feel better. "That's for calling me baggage," he thought at the sleeping bodies surrounding the fire. Then he remembered that Osman, of all of them, had been the friendliest, and he felt a little guilty. Not guilty enough to put the food back, though. There was a small stack of broken planks nearby, so he fed a few to the fire to keep Aaron warm. That done, he decided to stretch his stiff and aching legs. He left the fire behind and found a narrow stairway that took him to the lower floor of the boathouse. Downstairs was another room like the one above, with one side open to the lake via a row of pillared arches. Beyond, a small stone wharf pushed out into the dark water, where a few rotten rowing boats bobbed at their moorings, capsized and half-sunken. One had been dragged out and smashed. Cade guessed that was where Fen and Osman had found the fuel for the fire. There was another boat, too, larger and finer than the rest, braced in a wooden cradle to one side of the room. Cade wandered over and examined it. It looked relatively intact, even after all this time. He could still make out the swirling details of whales and waves along the gunwale and prow. He found himself thinking of the Ellaroo galleon that had foundered off Shoal Point, how its whitewood hull had resisted the ravages of time. Maybe this boat was made of something similar. He ran his hand along it, and it was as smooth and hard as ivory. A soft noise made him raise his head, the sound of some small movement amplified by the eerie silence of the valley. Warily, he crossed the room to the pillared arches. A low stone wall ran around the edge of the wharf, and sitting on it, one leg dangling, was Fen. She was looking out over the water, where the islands of Skavengard rose silver in the night. The sisters were caught in a net of stars overhead, on opposite sides of the sky. Cade studied her profile by their light, her long face and heavy-lidded eyes. She'd thrown back her hood, and her red hair was gathered in a loose ponytail that hung over one shoulder. They'd all been running since the moment they met, and Cade had found her chilly and terse until now. But in the moonlight, his imagination recast her, making her thoughtful, aloof, and mysterious. As if she could hear his thoughts, she turned her head and saw him, hiding in the shadows of the pillars. He jumped, caught staring, then raised a hand in greeting to cover his embarrassment. She held his gaze for a few moments, then turned away with crushing disinterest. Crushing disinterest was no deterrent to Cade, however. He was used to it from the girls back home, and Fen wasn't much older than they were. He walked out onto the wharf, climbed atop the wall next to her, and let his legs dangle over the water. "My ma loves the night sky," he said, gazing upwards. "We'd go up on the roof of the workshop with mugs of cocoa, and she'd tell me how the constellations got their names, and point out the planets. You know the story of Sebastra's ribbon?" He pointed one stubby finger at the east end of the valley, where a cloudy swirl of red and yellow hung faint in the dark. "Well, one day Sebastra, aspect of love and beauty, was dancing in a forest, and Og, he's the aspect of beasts and nature—" "I know who Og is," said Fen, annoyed. "So Og, he's on a hunt, and he comes across Sebastra dancing alone in the night, and Og, being a lusty sort, he thinks he's got to have her. So he creeps close and lunges for her." He lunged to show her and came dangerously close to overbalancing and falling into the lake. "But Sebastra's too quick. She dances away and all Og gets is a single ribbon torn from her dress. He's so mad he flings it away and it floats off into the sky. It's still there now." Fen made no reply and showed no further interest in talking. Cade blew his cheeks out and tapped his heels against the wall. She was a tough audience. "But it wasn't only Og chasing Sebastra," he said, brightening as he remembered another story. "Joha was too. That's how the moons came to be. See, Joha is the Heron King, aspect of sea and sky."
"I know."
Cade suspected by her tone that her teeth were gritted. That was all right by him. At least she was paying attention, and Cade had always believed that any attention was better than none at all. "One day," he went on, "a fish told Joha that Sebastra desired his company for the night, and he was to meet her in a secret grotto. Except the fish was no fish at all, but Vaspis the malcontent, up to his mischief. So Joha went to the grotto, and there he found a potion and a note from Sebastra telling him to drink it and wait for her. Eager with lust, Joha